Underground Espionage, episode 64. Mm. Tara, how is it going?
It's great, Mike. Thank you for asking.
In a little pain today. Today's kind of a pain day.
Yeah, it's a pain day. I mean, I was at PT, which is, you know, the TC torture hour. It's so fun. But, you know, whatever. As long as I can sit in a chair like a person, I'm fine. So I am now sitting in chairs. I can ride in cars in the front like seat.
Like a big girl.
Like a real boy. My knee is nearly a real boy. I can kind of walk around. I don't know. It's nice. Yeah. It feels great.
I'm going to misery your ass, and we'll get all started all over again.
That's perfect. Okay, well, great.
Good. I'm glad.
Unless
that you're
I get
on board.
Too cocky and hurt myself in a different way, so that's fine.
Hey, look.
Yeah.
Very, very possible. Well, yeah, I mean, we're just sort of, you know, today it's, you know, kind of filled with dread and, you know,
stress and dread. But, you know.
And so we felt that something like the church would be a good movie for our zone, and guess what it was?
Well, and also, you know, we've kind of been in this weird space where, you know, it's physical therapy, it's healing, it's survival, and we've been in kind of this strange otherworldly space. And I would say liminal space normally, but I feel that word is just overused right now, and I really don't want to say that, but I can't. Another word doesn't come to mind at the moment. So it is a strange, like, feeling of it's the end of the summer.
Yeah, no, it is.
You know
weird.
What I mean?
Yeah,
we're going back to like a real world somehow, well, it's strange.
Very strange. Yeah. So no, it is that strange feeling.
So part. Yeah. And so we have this week. You know, I'll meet with a surgeon on Thursday and figure out what I need to do. But we have this kind of weird week where we're just kind of like
we're still waiting, just waiting to hear,
being filled with dread. You know, the bills have started to come in, all that fun stuff. So you know what? Why not the church?
Fun.
But part of winding the old, you know, summer fun down was going to the sale at Counterpoint. And when we went to the sale at Counterpoint, like everything was half off. It's books, movies.
It's
like
once
everything.
A year they do a half off sale. And that was a great.
We had
a great time.
Such a great time and found a lot of amazing things. Got a Russ Meyer CD or DVD that we
I
don't
love
have.
That you
like
called
a
it a CD.
God damn it!
I was
looking
I can't
at a stack
if
of
I've
CDs.
Told this story before, but I was at Amoeba once and I heard a dad explaining to his kids, like, "Oh, a DVD. It's like a CD, but it has a movie on it." Which I thought was amazing.
Oh, yeah, that's really, really cute. That's sad. Well, so we were there. We got Mudhoney. We got all kinds of cool stuff.
I was glad it's our copy of the Mudhoney, put out by Russ Meyer DVD. Hope and Severin, I was actually having this discussion today with a future guest, but hopefully they're going to do more. I mean, because they did, you know, those great ones.
Yeah, and everything was so cost prohibitive for so long. And even like reading the order sheet on the inside, it was like checks allow 2 weeks for processing,
so good.
three weeks to ship, like everything. It was just like, wow.
But I mean, there's still a ton of Russ Meyer movies to do. So I'm hoping that Severin's doing them. I'm you know, it's been a minute since they've done a Russ Meyer, so we'll see. But I was saying I'm really hoping they would do Mudhoney, Lorna, many more.
Anything. Oh my God, the 7 minutes. I want to see that so much.
So much.
But what really got me, what I got, and then got me in the zone and wanting to watch the church.
Yeah.
Was that I got this book called Leadbeater Returns, and it's a guy who's using a medium to contact Leadbeater in the other realm, and did like a lot of other like famous people, did like Blavatsky and like all kinds of, you know, all kinds of people in the theosophy realm and things of that nature. But it's an interview through the use of a medium, and you know, I just thought it seemed like such a fun time of the 70s where people are putting out a series of novels that are interviews of famous people, but you don't know until you read the fine print that it's actually. They even interviewed Thomas Jefferson. Like, I'm really wanting to read more of these, but I don't know. I thought it was interesting. So I'm in that zone right now of like esotericism, telekinesis, like. But it's also like it has like in a woman who owned it before. She wrote a lot of notes, and she would write like hogwash, psychobabble. Like, she's reading this and getting pissed.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And there's all these quotes. So I've just really loved the dark theology. And so when we were discussing what we wanted to watch, I was like, well, we got to do something. Do we have anything involving like telekinesis and demons?
Yeah, or just esoteric, like dark religious
something
stuff.
Something mystical.
So it was meant to be, because you had actually pulled this out to watch a week or two ago, mm-hmm. and we hadn't gotten around to it. But
when I was in pain and laying on the bed, just looking at DVDs because I couldn't move, and I pulled some out, that was fun.
But then this also was specifically requested by a listener.
Thank you,
for
listener.
Us to cover the church, and gave a little teaser the other day, and people are very excited for us to talk about the church, which I'm excited too, because I do love this movie, and every watch love it more. Mm-hmm. Before we get into that, though, I did want to highlight a really great new movie and new filmmakers who have a new movie coming out here in October. But really, in the past week or two, connected with the makers of Weird Visions Society, and it came out in 2025, I believe. It might have been 2024. I'm looking at the fine print. But Ryan Patrio, I'm sure I'm pronouncing your name wrong. Very much apologize.
Such a joy.
Petrillo. Patrillo or Patrillo.
Patrillo,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, look.
Or Patrillo. I mean, it just depends. Hey, like Sophia Patrillo on Golden Girls.
Anyone used to me as I just mangle names constantly. That's what I do. That's what I'm great at doing.
I love it when you do it. But, you know, I mean, like, everybody who reads privately to themselves to any extent, like, we've all mispronounced this.
What is it called?
When you're an autodidact, yeah. when you're self-taught and you read to yourself, you tend to have pronunciation because you've never actually heard the word said out loud. So it tends to be the case.
I pronounce names, band names, especially, mm-hmm. I mean,
I learned a new word through Morrissey. He said that this described him. He was a bit of this. Mike, do you want to try to say it?
Let me see. Let me see.
Obstreperous. It's like,
see, but when you say it, I'm like, oh, I've heard that word. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When you say it,
yeah.
But then when I read it.
Well, you heard Morrissey say it. It means noisy, unruly, and stubbornly hard
well,
to
Ryan,
control or hold back.
I am
but
so
that
sorry.
Made me so happy. Anyway,
I am incredibly sorry. And along with his partner, and great another great name. Again, I read it and I can see it, but then when I start to say it, Dan Lasowski. I think that's pretty cool. I think I got that.
I think you got it.
But Ryan and Dan, much easier to say. I'm going to go ahead and give up now. But I just want to say that it was great. We've connected in the past couple weeks. And then it just also turns out that we have other connections through some different people. And so I said, what a great small world. But then I'm like, if you're an underground maniac, whatever, you're going to have connections.
You have niche interests. They
happen.
Tend to, yeah.
But Weird Vision Society, really cool anthology, micro-budget movie that these guys did. And it looks great. This one's not shot on VHS, but their upcoming movie, Toxic Moon, is. But this looks great.
I thought it was lovely. It was really visually stunning. The color was fantastic.
The color looks great. It's a cool story where these like hooded figures drink different colors of slime, and then each different color, a new story comes in. So I believe there's five or six. There's a lot. I mean, it's an hour and a half, and each story is great. The effects look great. Again, total DIY. A lot of slime. Their big thing seems to be slime and ooze. Like, there is blood and guts as well, but yep. Slime and ooze seems to kind of be their predominant mode of expression. And the preview for the new one, Toxic Moon, looks very, very slimy, and very excited for it. But this Weird Vision Society is really cool. There's a Blu-ray. I grabbed it directly from them, but there's this label, Bloodsick Productions, who, again, related to some people we know. They have it in their distro, and it's a cool little world right now. Micro budget, shot on video, DIY filmmakers that are doing stuff in a really cool way, with the spirit of the old days, but, you know, with just, you know, just now, you know, through, as we always say, through the human pedal, mm-hmm. right? The soundtrack's great on this, too. I really especially like the soundtrack to The Obelisk, the last story, real great ambient stuff. And but all of it's great.
No, the sound was fantastic.
Sounds great. Yeah, it's just, it's a great, it was, it just got me excited thinking about what some of these new people are doing. And for example, like our longtime friend Matt Minner has been doing some great shorts. He just mm-hmm. sent us a new one that's incredible. And he turns out Matt and Ryan have been in contact. So there's just a great connection with that. And I know Matt's new short is going to be playing at a screening of Debbie Does Damnation in Philadelphia in October. So that's going to be, that's so great. Toxic Moon's premiering in Philly in October as well. I believe it said the screening sold out, but hey, we'll see. I don't want to make any announcement right now, but Tara and I have a pretty cool, an event coming up that we're a part of, a live event as Underground Espionage. I'll wait to announce that till everything's completely set with the date. But we really hope we could parlay that into doing some other stuff and you know, maybe bringing some of these movies out and doing them, because there's, you know, we got Whammy. We have other cool places mm-hmm. around here that do cool, small screenings.
But will there be a couch where we can sit on each end of the couch and stare at each other into it? I don't know how we're going to do this live.
I mean, you know, we are... Oh, how we would do it live. Yeah, that's true.
That
is really
interesting. Yeah, yeah. I wonder if we'd be as comfortable. Like, yeah, can I wear, yeah, yeah. like, a silk kimono or a caftan?
I thought,
like,
you
can I wear
like
that?
How we watch things, you know, in public. Because we just generally watch at home, so.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that might be a totally different beast. But you know what? I was thinking maybe, you know, that maybe... To go back to it, maybe the reason you read so quickly is because you don't say the words out loud in your head. I've heard that is the key to speed reading.
Oh, my!
And you read really quickly, and if you don't have a narrator in your head, you tend to be a faster reader than if you actually have a narrator. So you're supposed to ingest the words without saying it aloud. Maybe that's why you do it, because you don't get concerned about how you say the word. You just like take the word and keep going. You know?
Yeah, and. Yeah, I've always
just
been bad.
Power through those words. What's that
I
one?
Mean, I know he's extra. How many names, band names I mangled for years?
You can pick it out of a lineup. You just like, you know what it is. You just don't know how to say it.
Yeah, I'm going to move my mic. Sorry if I made a sound. But yeah, so look out for Weird Vision Society. Again, you can pick up the Blu-ray now, but really look out for Toxic Moon. And we're going to be promoting it, and certainly, you know, when it comes out, you're going to know from us, because we're really excited about it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, make sure to look them up, follow them where you follow them, and, you know, maybe try to get a screening out here. That would be pretty cool. But, yeah, so that's been a really great watch this week. We've, you know, watched many things this week, but Tara...
That and Creepshow 2 was great because of the slime. We had to do a little.
Well, yeah, ago. Creepshow 2, that was one we grabbed at the Counterpoint sale. Again, important to note, and I did throw this out there. Oh. Very important to note, Tara, is that we brought everything up. And, you know, there were even moments of like, oh, maybe put that back. And then, but it ended up being like, you don't just grab everything. It's
everything's
half off.
Yeah.
They're adding up the total, adding up that total, you know, tax, boom. What is our total, Tara?
69.
Everybody got excited. We cheered. Everyone behind the counter was like, no way.
We can't buy another single item. This was the perfect purchase.
Or if
purchase.
You would have put anything back.
I know. Perfect purchase.
So 69. And anyone who knows us knows how exciting that got us.
Yeah, it was really
And then it
exciting.
Did get us thinking about, you know, we are coming up on episode 69. And so we do have an idea about what we're going to do for episode 69, which we're pretty excited about. So you know it's going to be special when it's Underground Espionage.
You know it's going to be sleazy.
You know it's going to be sleazy. And, you know.
It won't be slimy, but it might be greasy.
It's definitely going to be greasy. So we are definitely excited. So that'll be a good episode for us, Tara. You know, that'll be a good, it'll be kind of the opposite of our last porn episode. Her name was Lisa. You know, that was very dark and depressing. This one is going to be
serious and
just
dark.
A lot fun and greasy and oily.
Ain't that the truth?
Very, very excited. Well, Tara, I'm so glad that everything lined up so that when we were deciding what to do for this week's episode, we landed on the church.
Last night, the angel of evil possessed me, and I became his servant. I want to do evil, to kill.
This one is...
La Chiesa, 1989.
Oh. Tara, you know, I stepped over that. Will you please say it again?
La Chiesa. I think that's how you say that. Whoop.
Tara, I'm going to give it to you for time. Look at us.
Well, what are you going to give it to me?
I feel like we're like... it is this dread that we just have right,
I
right
am
now.
So
we're
in a very, full of anxiety
we're in a very
right
weird
now.
Zone.
I don't feel like anything... I'm second-guessing every
same.
Word that comes 100%. Out of my mouth. I resent every word that comes
yeah,
out of my mouth.
Same.
I can't stand the sound of my own voice. I'm just in like one of those
I'm
places.
With you.
And I'm,
you know,
I apologize.
But I like it. The listeners are with us
so
together.
Sorry.
You go through this journey with us together. If this is your first episode, hey, I don't know.
My
sorry.
Bad. Yeah.
But if you've been with us, you just know that part of this whole podcast is just not only is it just the movies and the stuff we watch, but it's just going through. You're going through it with
through
us
it.
Together. It's just what is going on with us in this past week or two. But yeah, 1989. And this one has always been to me a standout in Italian cinema, especially 80s Italian mm-hmm. stuff, because for so long it was always 70s, and obviously, you know, amazing. But the 80s, I think it's just as great. It's just different. It's a very different.
Yeah, they take on a different face.
And something like The Church really, to me, combines some of the haunting abstractness of some of the 70s stuff and the look, mm-hmm. and then with just an 80s, you know...
bigger, more,
yeah,
it's grandiose.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sexual, but it's not, like, sexually over the top. It's really visually impressive, even down to having just, you know, being inspired by the works of Bosch, but like using that visually, like within real actors. Oh, I'm so fucking inarticulate right now.
It's good
insane.
Thing we decided to do a podcast.
My God, this is, well, you know what? We're going to power through. You know what I mean? How about this? You know, it is a subject.
I literally, like,
my God, I hate myself so
I
fucking
just
much right
thinking
now.
About,
I was
like,
we're going to be so serious during this.
I
and
know.
I'm like, just like.
I literally yeah. started, like,
I'm
my
rip
brain
my
was
guts
like.
Out right now.
My brain was like, what do you. You don't know anything about.
I know,
like,
you don't
anything.
Know anything about. You know nothing about nothing, idiot. Jesus. We have no business discussing this. Yeah. Look, we know a little bit. Okay.
What do you like?
Yeah, let's just keep it
70s
simple.
70s Italian. You think you
I
know
can't
about
even
it?
Name one right now. I'm sweating so bad. Movie?
Okay.
So,
all right,
okay.
All right, all
look.
Right.
But here's the thing. So, in some way, like after. Oh my God, you son of a bitch. Well, you know what? Let's
okay.
be lighthearted about it.
All right, all right.
I'll do some more confessions.
Okay.
Like after we watched the interview with Dario Argento, and then we watched the interview with Michele Soavi, and like they're discussing the inception of this film,
yeah.
how Argento couldn't do it, and like they had like met through Bava,
and
Bava vouched for Soavi.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, you know, we hear the whole tale, and then Soavi's thing was like, this was supposed to be Demons 3, and it's The Church, and then you know, they offered me the job and I'm doing it. And then you talk to Argento and Argento was like, it was never Demons 3. Demons 3 was never in the picture. It was never going to be Demons 3. I don't know why that came into
it. Well, it's because what had started was that Bava was going to make Demons 3. And this is called Demons 3. There's post, yes. like it has been, is... It is sometimes.
It has
known as
been
that.
Called Demons 3. But it's been billed as Demons 3 in some.
Yeah,
areas.
Yeah. But once they, you know, he got on board and basically changed everything, then it was no longer thought of that while they were making it, even if it was going to be billed like that.
And we
places.
Are massive fans of Demons 1 and 2. Of course, I find them to be like, if I'm sick, that's what I want to watch. I find them to be wonderfully relaxing.
Which is weird that we have not watched them this summer.
Oh yeah, that's true. It's been a different type of sickness. It's been more of a despair. but thinking about something with the script of the church and with the idea of Demons 3 and what cinemas may be looking for in terms of being, you know, lurid or sketchy or sleazy or anything of that nature, I think that this film takes on such a remarkably artistic and dignified taste. Like, it really does like approach the mysticism with a seriousness.
Yeah, no, totally
and,
does. Yeah.
And a, like, I'm not gonna say like a reverence for esotericism, but it actually accurately portrays things.
No, I think it does. And Catholicism, because the whole thing is that it mixes all these things together, and it does, it's not like a blasphemous movie, even though they filmed this in Hungary because they weren't able to find a church in Italy that would do it.
Yeah.
Because they were seeing it as this blasphemous thing. But
well, and because there is nudity to some extent, and then having like demons and devils invoked in a church, like I'm sure people were a little hesitant to do that. But then they found a church in Budapest, and they said that they went there because it was still kind of, you know, semi-communist, and so they had a feeling that the government wasn't very religious and they wouldn't care if they used their church, and that was the case. So every morning before they filmed, a priest would come in and unconsecrate the church and then reconsecrate the church when they were finished, which I think is an amazing touch.
So great. But I love, kind of like when we, way back in the early episodes, I think it's like episode 5 when we did Haxan, I love when like Satan is evil and real.
Yeah.
And so it really is like it's
you, it's not without, you're not going to take up, you're not going to get this Satan and put it on a baby onesie and give it to your friend at their shower.
Exactly.
You know,
if you have God, you also have Satan, and if you have Satan, you also have God, and that's what this movie encompasses. So it's like ultimately the church,
the church is literally fighting evil. So
yeah,
if somebody hasn't seen this, like we're going with the premise that we've all seen this, but you know, things slip through. You never know. We've never seen his previous. I haven't seen The Sect, and I would love to see The Sect.
Correct. That is correct. That's one where it's just one of those that has passed us by, and so many people are like, dude, how have you not seen it?
I know. I don't know.
It happens.
You know what?
It happens.
I have a savings account of
it
some
happens.
Really fantastic films. The basic principle is that the Teutonic Knights have found a small village that's hiding out, and there is a girl that has been marked with stigmata. They have some sort of curse, some sort of corruption that can spread among the population. They've been touched by demons, and the Teutonic Knights need to save the neighboring landscape, the world, whatever, from these people who've been corrupted by demons. So they slay the townspeople.
Beginning takes place back in the medieval times.
Yes,
in the olden days.
In the olden days, the Teutonic Knights, I think, were around like 1066, somewhere around that area that they existed whereabouts. But so they slay everybody. They throw them in a pit, and then as the people start reanimating and coming back to life, they bury them quickly, and then they cover it with a giant cross, and they say they're going to immediately erect a church upon the area to keep the devils from climbing back up, to hold them at bay and save the world from being infected with their evil corruption that can spread virulently. And so then a church is erected, and we are now in modern times in the late 80s, which is a beautiful time for hair and people, and oh, it's so gorgeous, especially in Italy, my God. But these people are faced with a new threat because there is a bit of a breach in the church because it's being renovated, and now the big cross is exposed and people are put at risk for the demons to be resurrected again. And guess what? They are. And so then everybody has to figure out a way to fight them, and Bob's your uncle. That's the movie. And there you have it. And then she winds down, and once you just get in the nitty gritty, but yeah, you know. But if
no, I think I mean you I mean, nailed it.
Pretty much, I mean, just like demons, like you demons get it. Loose, and then people have to.
You nailed it, but like I said, what demons. I like about it is that it is actual like evil demons and Satan. Like it isn't just like you know, something like Mark of the Devil where it's witch hunt and the people and
they aren't really witches.
The chicks aren't really witches. I like when it is.
They just kind of like want their land.
I like when it is actually like, oh no, it is evil. Like
no, they are evil. I mean, so now we can start going over the details. So the
devil in the details, Sarah.
Oh my god.
Come on.
Well, and you know, I gotta look up the Teutonic Order. I was off on the date. Is the Teutonic Order established? In about 1190, I don't know why I thought 1066. What 1066? What was that? It was like Magna Carta. I don't fucking know. That's some date. Anyway, we're gonna move forward right now because we all know that I regret everything that I've said up to this point in my life. it wasn't order, and they were formed to aid Christians on their pilgrimages to the Holy Lands. And yes, they were known for being especially tough and especially brutal, much like is portrayed in this film. And they enter into a cave that is marked with the number of the beast, 666. And Kira is pointed out, and it says that she has been in league with Satan, and she bears the cross on the soles of her feet, and that she has the contagion. But I think what's so remarkable about this is, like, we have something in medieval times. Somebody's pointed out, and in the beginning, we don't know that it's real. You know what I mean? We have these knights coming in.
Right.
Helmets on and crosses over their face. And
it looks so great.
And it's amazing. And they're all riding in together. And, you know, with the white standard with the black cross on it. And it's done so seriously. And they're taken to meet her seriously. And this Kira, the young girl, is over, you know, in a stream washing herself. She quickly wraps up her foot. She comes up, and as the knight approaches her, she, you know, says, "You wouldn't hurt me," and then offers him like handfuls of water. And so you can see into her pretty green eyes, and she looks beautiful, and she's staring into the knight's face, and he looks really like serious and tough and amazing. And as he like stares into her eyes, he reaches out his hand that's covered in a gauntlet, and he crushes her face, and blood starts streaming down her head, like in his hand. And as he turns around and says, "Kill them all, leave no one alive except for the architect," you know, the guy that took them there. And they go through the town and they just slay people just, so brutally.
Yeah.
Like, it's none shall be allowed to live.
They just mass murder.
They take one lady and they put her on a stick between two horses and ride around. And it's so brutal.
Yeah.
Like, the killings are really, like, because at this point you don't know, right? You're like, these knights are barbarians. Like, they're going to kill all of these innocent people. This is fucking crazy. And it's really... I mean, this opening is like super brutal and like super visceral,
and just very different, right? From, you know, just taking place when it takes place, looks so great. So immediately, you know, you feel like this is going to have a great look to it, just because it's pretty, you know, it's a pretty big move to do like a medieval
this reaches
section.
This reaches or, you know, high, like, yeah, and it and I think they pull it all off, and you know, using the rocks, using the cave, like it's really, really a big scenery film. And I think they just use their assets well. And maybe, you know, that's what Soave learned, like in terms of doing his, I'm going to say Soave instead of Soave because I like, it's a wine and I like it. So look, you know what? It's going to happen. It's very obviously close. My bad.
A legend in Italian films, you know, worked with, you know, Dario, worked with Bava. He always was in like little parts in movies. You catch him as, you know, he's in so many different things. Of course, the movie Stage Fright, one of the best. Yeah. So, you know,
but he's so aesthetic in his eye.
Yeah.
You know, he's even said he's like a painter. Like, he has an eye for artistry. And really, I think, uses the location to such a benefit to, you know, really maximize what they have. So but that's especially apparent here. And really opening this, and then you have this giant mass grave, and they're just tossing bodies. It's so visceral. It's so meaty, you know, like just really that, like that body, that feeling when you see like the, like a limp body being thrown into a pit of bodies, you know? And then as they start kind of writhing again, and they just say, bury the demons from hell before they arise. And then, you know, as they cover them with dirt, and the one reaches up and pulls the horse's foot down, and he rolls in, then they bury them quickly and throw a cross on top to, you know, sanctify the ground. Is that the word? But I just thought that, you know, just that was such a beautiful, stunning opening. And
what
I think
way to start. What a setup.
Yeah, what a setup. And then we move into our church, and when you open into the church, you see these phenomenal frescoes that are being restored. What is the actress's name? Her name's Lisa, and she played the one in the beginning of the story that had the mark on her.
This church is so incredible to look at, and especially old Catholic churches. There's just nothing like them.
Barbara Kupisi.
Especially going through in Europe, if you ever get a chance to, you got it. Like when we were in Italy,
In Ravenna, last time, we got to see all the Byzantines.
Yeah,
that
it's just
amazing.
So incredible, and the windows and the architecture, and this the set designer did add a lot to this church. Mm-hmm. It was a lot more bare than it is in the movie, but they allowed him to really add to it, which is I mean if you ever walked into this church and it looked like this with the hooded figures praying in the hood, I mean you'd
be
like,
oh my god, it would be
you're like, I'm in like the sickest like black metal album,
so
like in person.
And then
like,
the fresco is like, it's clearly influenced by Bosch, and the director said it was, but it's demons devouring. It's so ornamented, but it's like colorful, like things like eating people's bodies, and like, you know, dragons with teeth and bird men, and very menacing. It's great. And I did get, like, I'm just trying to, like, maybe I won't go on too many tangents.
I mean, Tara, look, I think we're finally, you know, half hour in, I think we're finally, I think we got our groove.
Trip.
I'm saying, I think we're like,
I know,
I think
but
we're
I
in
get,
it.
But my side trips would kind of like kill
that's
the group.
That's part
but,
of it.
But like, I was thinking about like something I was read a long time ago, and that is like, you know, debate over the number of the beast, right? Because everyone spent so much energy discussing the number of the beast, 666, like it's such a thing in everybody's life, right? From metal to art to like whatever. And I know that I had read that it's possible that 666 wasn't actually the number of the beast, because there is a 616 variant. Do you know about this, Mike? And I had read it.
I don't.
And I did also read in one manuscript, there's a different one, but I can't remember where I read it, so we're going to have to go with this one. So early biblical manuscripts, specifically Papyrus 115, Mike, list the number as 616 instead of 666. And frequently it's thought that Nero, because he was doing so much Christian persecution, when you spell out his spelled his number in Hebrew, it's 666, but depending on a variant spelling, it's 616. So they always thought it was alluding to Nero, because he spent so much time slaying Christians that's how the number came to pass. Nero Caesar is 616. So early numbers of the number of the beast are 616. However, if you're really thinking about the angel numbers and the higher meanings that people ascribe to them, 7 is supposed to be the number of completion, as we've discussed many times, like Sir Isaac Newton's obsession with the number 7, giving 7 colors of the rainbow. And essentially shoehorning indigo in there, when you're like, what's the difference between blue and indigo? So like shoehorning something else in there so that the color spectrum, the prism, had 7 numbers, because he felt that was the holiest of numbers. Whereas 6 is viewed to be a number of incompletion. So if he had had six distinct colors within the prism, then you would have something that's incomplete, right? But actually, that may have been more fitting because there's the ultraviolet scale. So maybe he should have stuck with six, because then he knows that there's actually more colors that he can't see with the naked eye. And then that would make more sense. However, I digress. But that is another interpretation of why the consensus around the number of the beast became 666, because it had that connotation. Is that it at all? I don't know.
I wasn't trying to interrupt you. I was letting you, Tara. I was letting you.
And maybe one day we can go into a whole discussion about Isaac Newton obsessed with the number seven, because he used the number seven many times at some point on some podcast.
I don't know.
Maybe that was when I was like, really. I think it was when I was really into like Wolfgang Pauli.
Yeah, and it would have been definitely old home.
And
time
I was
days.
Really into yeah. like there's a book about the relationship between Wolfgang Pauli and Carl Jung and the friendship they had, and they were obsessed with the number 137, and which was like Planck's constant or some like constant of the universe, and they kept finding it everywhere. So whereas Pauli was a mathematician physicist and Carl Jung wanted to take things down to their most basic form, you know, so those two developed a friendship discussing like if numbers are archetypes, and then the way that numbers play with archetypes. And Wolfgang Pauli said that he was afraid of the number 137 near the end of his life. And when he went into the hospital, they put him in room 137, and that's where he died. So a lot of, but they had like a lot of correspondence before that, and it was really interesting. But yeah, kind of like that.
But yeah, so it's just so rich. This movie is just so visually rich, and so many different, like you said, Tara, symbols, numbers, everything is just coming at you, and it definitely demands repeat viewings, because you catch a lot of things on different watches, and you can watch it from just, you know, the large swath of it, or you can dig into some of the details, which we did on this watch.
Yeah.
And you already get the sense that there's something gothic and ancient about the church, from the hooded statues, but then what do you think are all three hooded statues, but then it turns out one of them is the
bishop.
Is the actual the bishop,
and the bishop is the perfect like scary like older, very stern bishop. Like he seems, you know, quite joyless. He seems to really be obsessed with the rules, but he also is minding his, you know, manuscripts. And
exactly.
People, you know, they hire the man who came in, like one of our, Evan, we have an attractive young gentleman from the outside who's there to catalog all of their books. And for being somebody who is there to catalog books, or like, I'm losing the word, what are the people, like a custodian of all libraries. Him and the bishop are really quite haphazard with it. They're like smoking cigarettes over an illuminated manuscript, and they're like tossing the books around, ripping pages out, just like grabbing them with their bare hands, drinking next to them. Like, it's pretty wild.
It definitely is.
It's pretty wild.
We have John Morgan, a.k.a. Giovanni Radici, Italian legend, of course, as one of the other priests. And so
and then we also have Aja Argento as Lottie, and
Aja Argento in
the
early role.
Voiceover, you get used to it, but I'm gonna have to say, like,
right
it
away
is,
you're like,
oh my god, she has one of the most bonkers voiceovers. She's kind of like, hey, my name's Lottie, what's going on, guys? I'm gonna sneak out tonight and be bad at the discotheque. Like, she sounds like a cartoon. Like, it's really it's very jarring. But you get used to it.
So she's great in this. She's fantastic. You know, she lives on the premises with her mom and dad. And so, but she's immediately, you find that she's good at sneaking out. Because one thing important to note about this church and the way this church was made was that it's a monoportal church, meaning the only in and out is the front door. There's no back door, there's no anything. But we do learn early on that Aja Argento has figured out a little crack somewhere that she is able to sneak
clever,
out.
Clever girl. So we have all of these people. So we have Evan, who is trying to make a name for himself. He's like, what am I going to catalog books on my life? I need to get into something else. So he strikes up a sexual friendship with Lisa, who's restoring the frescoes. Immediately they take to each other, Mike.
Bang, right away. But I mean, night I guess one. There's
not a lot of options, though, generally. Like when you're in a cathedral or whatever, it's not like you have whatever. But hey, they seem to be well suited. They're both very attractive.
I tried to bang you, you know, night one.
Yeah.
But it was night two.
I was busy.
Yeah.
I was busy. I was occupied. Look, you know, sometimes I have to take care of a drunk roommate. But then when she was good, we were fine. Time to go, you know, just
time to go.
Evan and Lisa. But yeah, so we have a lot of amazing characters. The church is fantastic. They introduce the concept when Evan and Lisa are together, you know, because Evan's like, as Lisa is inspecting a crack that has developed in the basement of the church, she pulls out a tiny manuscript and she shows Evan, and before she turns it in to the bishop, and he's like, no, let me do it. I can do it. Like, I can figure it out. I got to make a name for myself. So he shoves it in his pocket, looks at it while he's driving, smokes some cigarettes on it, probably spilled some coffee on it. But then as he's trying to decipher it, he tells the story of Fucinelli, which would have been like a French alchemist at the time. And this actually is a real person. And he's a really, really interesting figure in the early 1900s who claimed that alchemy was real and on two occasions demonstrated to an audience that he could turn lead into gold. And he did, like, what, 200 grams of lead into gold?
It was something like that, yeah.
And he wrote many books, and then one day he just disappeared, and nobody knows where he went.
But The Mystery of the Cathedrals is one of the books, yes. And that, which is a lot what this movie is based on, that book. And the idea that all these Gothic churches popping up over Europe around the, you know, 1,000, like you said, around the, you know, 1,000, 1,100, yes. And that there was some sort of cosmic order to these churches. And
because
so,
they all appeared at the same time and that they're using actually an ancient knowledge, an older knowledge. And because he was obsessed with alchemy, he also did silver into uranium. And that was in 1937 when he did it in front of the audience. He then disappeared forever and nobody knows what happened to him. But the story of the cathedrals is so interesting because what he's saying is that where did everybody suddenly gain the knowledge? How did they understand the style? And that truly the information was passed down from what he insinuates could be divine or alien or could be demonic. And that the secrets were buried beneath the churches.
And so it's referenced in the movie, but it is truly was one of the big inspirations for making the movie itself. And so I do like how it plays in directly to what then progresses throughout the film.
And then introducing the concept of the architect, right? Like, I love the idea of the architect of the church. And the architect of this church had been the one man who had brought the Teutonic Knights to the people who were marked for disaster, let's call it. I love a good stigmata. Aren't stigmata fantastic? And then he was only let live so that he could build the church. And he built it with many safeguards, understanding what was going underneath. And part of what makes the fever pitch of the end, and again, like, once you put Demons 3 in my head, I'm going to have Demons 3 in my head, because the thing I like about Demons is that everybody's going to get it. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to... It's fine. Like, if you go into a demons film, you're just like, they're all probably going to go. You know what I mean? Or at least they're going to be cursed. Or if one person gets out, they're definitely going to be a demon. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like you're not waiting for, like, people to, like, be fine, right? So knowing that and then having the church as it enters this mode being closed off with, like, a child school group inside, old people. So... But there's a children's tour within the church at the time, and a
wedding
and a photo shoot.
Wedding dress.
Yeah,
photo shoot
for like a, I don't know, a ladies' fashion mag.
Ladies' mag. No,
but
not
so.
A girly
but mag. As the children are there, there's one precocious child who keeps saying things like, Hey, teacher, isn't it true that the designers always made one place in a church you could push and the whole thing would fall down as a safeguard? And the teacher's like, I don't know about that, son. But then all these kids start, like, piping off all these facts. Like, did you know that, like, from this era to this era, this type of church? Like all these, like, precocious youth that are, like, spouting off all the facts that their teacher had made them learn prior to coming in. But then we find out, you know, that the architect is the only, you know, as they're going on the tour and as we're talking to priests, as the teacher is teaching, the only person ever buried in that church, unlike other places, is the architect. They have the architect's tomb and then no one else was allowed to be buried. So why is it? What secrets does this place hold? Why can't they dig under the ground? And we have that idea of, like, there's one place that you touch in the church and the whole thing is going to explode and fall down upon you. And so, like, having all of those mysteries and being like, wow, this church is, like, you know, like a dangerous place of a mastermind as well.
Yeah, and I think if anything was held over from the original idea of it being Demons 3, it would have had to have been everyone trapped in a place unable to get out. And, and various people, like you said, school children, a photo shoot, there's a couple... A biker and his girlfriend,
an elderly couple.
So yeah. I would imagine if anything held over from the original idea of Demon's Tree, it had to have been that.
Yeah.
So I do love this last section because it gives you that dread of what's going to happen to everyone. But before that section is a really incredible really incredibly visual scene where Evan does get possessed pretty early on. Like, so in a way he is, you sort of think he's going to be the hero of the movie, but
yeah, he's going to, like, him and his lady are going to keep it safe. So,
but pretty early on he actually gets possessed, and because he discovers the mask with the seven eyes and the cross, but he starts digging into it. And I love the scene where it falls through the floor
and then
it's just the shot of the cross falling into an ocean. But there's the idea of, like, the ocean, the church, like,
over
above this ocean.
So there's a lot of,
I love,
so there's a theme of hallucination. So, I mean, I guess, again, if you haven't seen this, we're going to be jumping all over the place and confusing you. But, so essentially she finds that paper, and it says that he must find the stone with the seven eyes. And that is the key, is finding the stone with the seven eyes. So Evan is going around the church looking for it. He finds an amazing, and it's like a Cthulhu style, you know, like, I think it's a goat.
I mean, oh yeah, no, it is. It looks amazing.
On top of the cross where we know the people are under. So he starts trying to pry it up, and as he pries it up, like a, much like a top of a, what are those things called? It's like a, oh my God, ground hubcap. What is that called in the street?
I know exactly.
Why? I know. Ground hubcap. My brain is not working. What the fuck are those called? Manhole cover.
There you go.
So it's like
ground hubcap?
It's like a ground hubcap. It's a man.
I'm calling it a ground hubcap from now on.
So, oh my God. I'm
look out.
Right now.
There's no ground hubcap on that.
Don't fall in the hole.
Ground hole.
Don't fall in the ground hole. So as, you know, he pries it up, we have this beginning of the mixing of hallucination, reality and surreality, because the supernatural is getting so close to scratching the surface. The demons have come to play to infect the mind. So now that he's there and he pulls it up, you know, that's when the hallucinations begin, right? So as he pulls up the top, and the cross drops through, you see this, like, amazing glowing blue light, and it falls away to an ocean and then falls into this, like, far distant ocean. Visually, it's just, like, stunning.
Yeah.
And it's so otherworldly, but it really takes you into that space of magic.
And then now you're just fully there for the rest of the movie. Because now, and then you're going to question what you see. Is that something you saw? Mm-hmm. Is that a hallucination? Is it... Because, you know, this is like Demons 1 and 2. Like, demons are real. Satan is real. Evil is real in this movie. So, but it also tricks you. So sometimes you see things, sometimes you don't see things. Sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not there.
And it's, I like mixing the practical and impractical. 100%. So, like, for example, like, when he reached in the first time into the hole in the ground, he gets cut. And it's something, like, cuts a big gash on his wrist. So... But then, you know, we could think that somebody is slashing him or a demon's grabbing him. Because then he, you know, hallucinates that he pulls out a brown leather sack, and when he opens it, like, demon hands come out and pull him in. However, you know, when he comes out of it and he looks into the hole, there's a claw, just like in the mask on Demons
1,
when there is, like, something that infects them, like, that has been placed there and to infect you with
Suave
it.
Suave is the person in the mask in the opening of Demons 1.
It's amazing. So there you have it. But really adding that element of, like, there's the practical infection, and then there's the mixing with all of the supernatural elements and the possession elements and understanding what's happening. But I thought that was such a... I agree, Mike. That was, like, visually stunning and beautiful.
And I think it sets up the way the rest of the movie is going to go until then, you do get to the part where all these people have converged into the church. The lock has been hit.
And then we do see that, like, you know, when they discuss the Teutonic Knights, discuss that the contagion is spreading, like, it's a contagion.
Yeah.
So as Evan goes and he punches Lottie's dad in the face, then he's infected. Like, anybody that gets touched, you know, becomes infected.
And, like, and then they act weird. Even, like, the kids, just kind of start acting a little weird. And one of them
starts,
like,
stealing glasses. They start, just being a little more rambunctious.
I like the model in the wedding dress when the doors close and lock them in. Her dress is stuck in and she can't get out. And the photographer's like, "Don't rip it out. That's like $1,000
rental. We have to return that dress."
And then when she finally gets out, it's the teacher that ends up getting. They finally do get the model
So at one point when the doors closed, so a mechanism was flipped when Lottie's dad was possessed. And, you know, he had been acting strangely and he goes down to the big cross in the basement. And it's such an amazing scene because he turns the jackhammer upon himself and lays upon the jackhammer. It jackhammers through him and starts jackhammering the floor where the seven-eyed seal of the beast is. And once it hits the seal... Then, you know, once the blood hits the seal and everything, then the switch is
Everything's going.
We start to see the cool gears, like the steampunk gears that close the door designed by the architect. And as the door starts closing and we have a model in the doorway with a beautiful shot, honestly, she's totally. Totally backlit, total 80s style big dress. I always wanted to wear those, you know, and I would wear it. You know what? I'd wear that every day. I'd wear one right now. I love giant dresses. So much fun. Wonderful things. And the doors close and she's stuck in it and she can't get out and they don't want to cut the dress. But as the man was rushing by the wind, jackhammered himself, which was such a cool move. He hits the fake groom in the face, and then his face is starting to melt. And so you think that he's going to, like, eat the bride, or you know, that he's going to freak out and she can't move. You don't know where everything's going. And I think that, like, all of the chaos of this scene of, like, her screaming, the children running around being mischievous, people starting to, like, really melt, everybody being stuck in and understanding the, like, mono portal situation they're dealing with, and there's no way to open the door. It's really, like, exciting.
Yeah, exactly. And then, again, just with what you're going to get, because this is, you know, with the demons, you're just going to get demons tearing people apart. With this, it's more abstract. So, for example, one of the best scenes in the movie is when Evan, when the biker chick is you know, kind of crawling away, and then her dude's looking for her, and then the Evan as this, like, satanic statue thing, like, rolls
demon,
out,
yeah.
And he's enveloped her naked body, and then just sort of goes, it just sort of, like, slides away. It's just one of the great, it's one of the most memorable scenes.
No, it's
in the
amazing
movie.
It's what's the artist's name? Frizzante?
It's a different Frizzante. Artist, but it's like that.
It looks
based
like
on.
That.
And
God,
it was in my head. We shouldn't
have
even.
Head. I
have we should not have even.
Down here,
it's well, a very famous.
I know, but I also know Gehlig was the guy who did the other painting.
Well, and he did the set. He was the set design.
He did frescoes and all the stuff. He did an amazing job. But well, motherfucker,
it doesn't
anyway,
matter.
Frank,
No, it's not,
it's
and that's
not
who
I
it is.
Somebody else.
It's a very, it's based on a very famous.
Everybody yell it out together. Anyway, yeah. So he's like a giant demon.
Hey, look, I feel like we really kicked it up a gear, you know, about half hour in, but we're not perfect, okay? We are not perfect.
I'm back to being full
today
of
today is not a perfect day.
Not me, but as he
perfect
comes around
movie,
the corner,
not a perfect day.
She crawls away. As she crawls away. And then, yeah, and then he rolls back, like, in his black, you know, black wings looking like a metal cover. Like, semi-nudity in the church. Like, it's amazing that they pulled this off, and it looks great. And it's just really, really stunning, but it only foreshadows, you know, scenes of later as this escalates, and we get down to the tunnels underneath.
Yeah.
And there's an altar where Lisa has laid herself across, and truly then the winged goat beast demon mounts her, and then they have an amazing like bang sesh.
It looks
on the
amazing
altar.
And it truly looks scary. The goat devil, it truly looks scary. And the scariest scene is when someone's walking, the your POV is sort of walking by it, mm-hmm. and then you just sort of walk by and you see it from the side. The goat,
and it's just
devil,
everybody
just
whispering
fucking,
and chanting.
Fucking her. And it truly is a shocking, evil, incredible image. That is, again, this is the kind of thing that pulls it out from like the 70s Italian stuff. Like, this is like an 80s feel to it. There's more, the effects are heavier.
Yes.
There's more of this, but that scene to me in particular, like, it is just truly looks, it truly looks real. You know what I mean? It's not, it is actually, it's
well, of course,
very, very
effective.
Everything
like is a practical effect. And, but it's like, you get to that point and you're thinking like, okay, well that's, you know, that's the apex, right? But it's not like it ups itself so much, because then we're revealed, like, they tell the story of like how they continue to torture the architect through its life, because again, like, we can't go over every little detail, and you know, everybody doesn't need to know it, but like, Lottie was such an amazing character in this, in that, you know, in the early flashback to the time of the knights, she was the person that got away. She was wearing like a basket on her face. She was rescuing an important infant and running away. But then in this, you know, she was the witness from that time. And then during the time of the contagion, like, she is the one who said, like, I was there, I remember what happened, and then tells the tale of the architect, how he was continued to be tortured, and then the mechanism was placed in his mouth. So when
she's telling this to Father Gus,
yes.
Who actually, I don't think we've mentioned yet, but he's the other, he's got a great scene where he shoots an arrow. He's like walking around. He's
Hugh
like,
Quarshy.
Yeah, he's great. But so he actually ends up becoming the final priest in the movie,
yeah,
right? Like,
the
so,
final boy.
So she's the one who is, she's
yeah, it
telling
switches.
Him this.
Yes.
But
we have this whole through line, but like, she is an interesting character device in this, you know, that's somebody that's not an adult, that's somebody that's not involved in all of these other things, but she is an interesting narrator who calls back from the past, because you also, since you saw her before, you don't know if she is like also possessed, also a demon, is just somehow like affiliated with them, you know, like you have all these questions, and that it makes it seem like anything's possible in addition to total destruction.
Yeah, and then that's when, you know, he's asking, like, is there, you get, like, what is this other way out? You know how to get in and out. And, like,
yeah,
how'd
you get in? You've been getting in and out.
But he also understands that, and that he either has to, like, kill this, mm-hmm. or he and her get out, and this evil can now mm-hmm. get out. So he has to make the decision, like, he needs to find the architect, where the architect's buried, and find that mechanism that's going to bring the church
down. And
find
what's in the mouth of the architect. And at that time, that's when, I wonder, you think that's picking up? Okay, everybody, like, uh-oh. Another Tara side drag here. Let's steer the car right off this road. We have this, like, band of parrots that's been coming by, and I'm obsessed with them, and they're redheaded parrots. And you know, they usually come at like dusk, and they're so loud, and they sound like squeaky car tires. Like, they're loud, and it's a terrible sound, but I love them so much. And you might hear them, and they're going to make a like way, way, way too much noise. So if you hear like a weird, maybe like it sounds like a crossing signal mixed with a car accident, that's our cool parrots that live out there. They're fantastic and I love them. Anyway, at the time that he's looking for this mechanism that's going to bring down the whole church on all of their heads, but then contain the evil, something starts rising. And yeah.
The ultimate set piece in this movie.
The ultimate set piece that is, it's a, you know, from the depths, the mass of bodies that had been thrown into the pit, they come up like one giant, writhing, muddy entity. And it's really a beautiful, like, apocalyptic, yeah,
moving, swirling,
sexual, yeah, squirming, muddy heap of that's bodies. Incredible. And the way they do it is really amazing, because there's actual people lubed mixed up in, and writhing, yeah, around on this.
Hey,
and,
hey, previewed episode 69.
Oh, just a gooey, gooey mound of sensuous bodies rising from the floor of the church.
And writhing around on each other. Oh, I thought we were talking about,
oh my God, 69. Not that, not episode 69, but this. But, you know, so as, you know, he sees this, it's a terrifying image. Like, yeah, what, how is this going to be unleashed on the world? And so you see it rising and rising and rising. And like, it's really just such a, like, you think that the ante can't be upped anymore. You think you're not going to have any more like grandiose events. Like, we have the winged beast and the demon, yeah, altar, and then the fucking and the candles, like chanting, and like so many, the architect's body is revealed.
Well, so I was going to say, like, that's, I think, as incredible, yeah, as the way this, the mangled like skeleton mummified with the device in its mouth, mm-hmm, on top of this alchemy wheel thing, yeah, that, but that's also, I was going to say,
it's like
as
gears
this is
and
rising,
a pit of fire.
You see him, the architect, and it, that is truly like a terrifying image.
Yeah, yeah, where, you know, he was like mummified, burned, left,
yeah,
there with the device in his mouth while he was still alive, and then he was put in a crypt within the church. So you see just both just like absolutely horrifying images. And like, this has, like, in terms of like, Demons has a lot of gore, but this is just, the gore is in a different way.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, like, it's not as many. Like, there are some slashing things and, like,
some,
you know,
guts,
some hallucination,
sure,
of, like, ripping his own heart out. And then there's some...
Oh, I love when he holds it up to the skyline, the red skyline. That's a great image.
His beating heart up to the skyline. Yeah. Like, you have some of those things, but really the violence is more like imminent madness that's happening,
yeah,
and not understanding what the hallucination is, and then just really being possessed by an evil that is real and tangible in this world and wants to eclipse humanity.
Absolutely. And so Father Gus makes that sacrifice and turns the device, and the church crumbles. But Lottie, you know, she knew how to get out. So she is the only survivor, actually, mm-hmm, of the movie. And it does end with this incredible final scene, mm-hmm, and image of her going into the ruins of the church, putting flowers in for her parents. And then she sees, you know, one of the eyes and brushes it off and sees the stone of the, mm-hmm, seven eyes. And the way it looks on her with the sky, like the light coming up at her face, and then just that little look on her face, and then just,
yep, and then you're done.
It's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Truly an incredible movie, and I think it's a real, real standout, and like I said, one that benefits from every time you watch it, it's better than the last time you watched it.
Yeah. The casting is great. The music, oh, Goblin's in this.
So it's
and
Goblin
it was
and Keith Emerson.
Yes.
And Dario Argento said in an interview with him that they had commissioned Keith Emerson to do the soundtrack. He did Inferno. That's, you know, had done soundtrack stuff. And at this time, it was sort of fading out of music. And they said what he had sent them really wasn't that great. And so they used some of it, but then they also commissioned some Philip Glass songs or
yeah,
you know, paid for some Philip Glass songs, and then also Goblin added to it. So it's kind of like a mix of things, which is cool. I think it's fine, but I guess Argento and Emerson had a falling out after that, and they never made up. Sadly.
That's sad. But I mean, what they used sounded amazing.
The soundtrack's incredible. Yeah. So yeah, whatever was used, like, it's awesome, you know? Yeah. So, but again, they were saying it was just a different time because Keith Emerson was working on his own. He didn't really have the, you know, he just was like, you got to make, you know, you make, maybe he sent him the script or something like that. Yeah. But other than that, it wasn't like you could just send dailies back and forth. You know, he was in the UK, they're in Hungary, you know, they're not even in Italy. But the soundtrack is really incredible. And, you know, look, Severin, you know, obviously we talk so much about Severin and Vinegar Syndrome and all these great labels who do these great restorations of movies that, you know, first time we saw this was on VHS, and then you see the DVD and then you just keep moving on. And this is just looks incredible. Mm-hmm. To me, it's got to be the final statement, right? And visually, again, there's not, you're in this movie the entire time. You're really wrapped up in the world of this movie while you're watching it. You don't go anywhere else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're not, your mind doesn't wander. This is not a movie where your mind will wander. Mm-hmm. You will be locked in to the world because of the abstract nature of it and the mystery of it. So you want to see it unfold.
Yeah.
But even if it doesn't give you all the exact answers, it all really does line up for this, you know, whole, this just grand movie at the end of the 80s, you know, nearing the end of Italy's reign of just incredible horror movies and incredible films in general. Mm-hmm. You know, because a lot of, they would all go on. TV became the mode of Italy for, you know, after into the early to mid 90s, and a lot of them just, that's what they end up doing. They end up making TV stuff after that. But this is one of the last great, and it is just not even one of the last great Italian movies, it's just one of the great.
Yeah,
Italian
it's big, movies. big. It's great.
Incredible.
And it, I like when a film leaves you with that feeling of like, maybe there is magic in the world.
That last shot with Aja gives you that feeling,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like when you go away with that, let's say, I don't know, doubt, or you go away with a belief, or you just have that renewed interest in something that's maybe, you know, goes back to the dawn of humanity.
Definitely, no.
Or as something that's bigger than ourselves. Like, and it's an exciting feeling, and I love films like that. And I think that this is... It's fun, but it's done in a serious way.
Totally. No, it's done in a way, like you were saying, Tara, it's done in a way where I'm like, no, I think this is like really happening.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm like down. Yeah. I'm like, I'm down that this really happened.
And you can tell that like there was true artistry involved in making it because aesthetically it is also really stunning and well done. So, I mean, The Church, fantastic movie.
Truly one of the greats. I feel bad that we were maybe not as articulate as we should. I think we really picked it up, though. I think at first we were like, it took us a minute to get...
I mean, maybe we can do like some reprieves next week. We can just like
say
our disclaimers next week.
I think we really picked it up. But again, it's, you know what? No more needs to be said. You just need to go watch The Church or rewatch
The
Church.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, is there anything, what else did I miss that I have like notes on so many things? Well, you know what? It's fine. One day I'll just have to do like a references, like addendum. Like I'll be like, it's my footnotes. Maybe they can just be not sidetracks and I'll do footnotes and I can just get it all out about like numbers and gematria and stuff like that. And then we can just have Tara's side quest.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
I'm into it. Well, you know, hey, didn't know this was going to be on deck this week, but again, this was a direct request from a listener asking us to do this. So hopefully we did it justice. We really got in there, really got those old manuscripts. Maybe some of them were ripped up and we couldn't read all the words, but I think we got,
Reassemble them. We tried to, our thoughts got ripped up and we tried to reassemble them in our brain, but maybe they were also wet and covered in cigarette ash.
Exactly. So not sure what we'll have next time, but hey, you know, we'll be here and we really appreciate the support. Go watch The Church and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye. Thank you.